some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rated G Radio. It feels like it's been about 100 years since I've been on the air with you, but it's been about 100 years. I only did one live show last week with Peter Jude Ricciardi, who is the voice of Spicy Mike's Spicy Ketchup. He's a voiceover artist for Kathy Porter's book, and he is just really a fascinating human being. I was really lucky to have him on the show. But we only did one live show last week because I've spent the rest of, you know, the week in Phoenix for my dad's birthday. I mean, really, I used my dad as the excuse to go to Phoenix, but I had a couple of client meetings and I had some friends I wanted to go see, and but had a great time with everybody. So big shout outs to Dan Ostiak and his band Cadence, who hosted me in Tempe on Saturday night for a great performance. Made some new friends. Also got to spend time with Heather, who I used to work with at the moving company. And that was, you know, I've never really hung out with her. It was an interesting revelation that, you know, social media really does bring people together. I always liked Heather when she worked at the moving company. And then she left and I moved to California and we stayed in contact, or we got into contact on social media. And I've always been so impressed with her and just hearing what she's been doing with her life. Super cool. But the big surprise of the day. Now, you know, sometimes I think I need to realize on Facebook, and we're going to bring Gail on in just a couple of moments, by the way, and she's our captive audience for the whole hour. So we're going to get to have her visit with us about her writing, what writing workshop that she's doing, all the cool things that are going on in Gail's life. So if you want to call in, by the way, and talk to her, ask her a question. Tonight is a great night if you're a budding writer and are stuck or have questions from somebody who knows what they're doing. That is Gail. You can call the hotline now. We're open for the next hour to do business with you. 323-657-1493. That's the hotline. You can call anytime. Going back to Saturday before I bring Gail on. So I think I've realized that I can't use my smart-ass attempts at humor to post things on social media. Because if I do that, people aren't really sure what to make of that. Maybe I'll ask Gail what she thinks about this particular situation. But Gail gets me. I feel like Sally Field at the Oscars when I say this. But Gail gets me. She really, really gets me. So this past week, well, past couple of weeks, I've seen on social media people posting these very passive-aggressive posts. And they just like drive me up the friggin' wall. And if you're going to go do something, just do it. Nobody really cares, to be quite honest. You know, if you're not going to be on social media, I don't know who sits around with a checklist going, I haven't seen a post from Garrett in the last 18 minutes. I hope he's okay. That just doesn't happen. People just, you know, they check in with Facebook. They're not there to be, you know, your social calendar. But people will post, oh, just had enough. I can't take it anymore. I'm going to, you know, take a break from social media and Facebook, and don't worry though, I'll be back. And I just want to vomit every time I see that, because it's just the dumbest thing. If you're going to take a break from Facebook, take a break. Nobody cares. Trust me, we care about you, but we don't care that you're actually going to live life and not sitting behind a computer. So in quotes, I quoted something that somebody had said very recently, which was I have to take a break from social media. And I put it in quotes because I wanted to set up the joke about using ice cream. You know, ice cream, but ice cream. It's a play on words. It's an author's, you know, fantasy come true that you can use it in more than one different way. And so I put out this post, and if you read the post, it was very, very clear that I was making fun of people who were, oh, I just have to take a break from Facebook. Because at the end of it, it says, you know, it said something about, you know, ice cream, and it was quite clever. I thought so. And I had a dozen people send me private messages. We'll be here for you when you get back. And I could only say, would you please go read the post? And then they would go and read the post, and then they would write back, LOL, that was really funny. Of course it was funny, but if you didn't read the post and you just said, oh, I just need to take a break from Facebook. And I had even had somebody write me and go, I know you're making a joke because I saw that you started this whole thing with quotation marks. And I went, you get me too. You're like Gail. You get me. You understand. So I'm going to do my best not to try to have any humorous anecdotes that I'm trying to impart upon society, because apparently my platform is such right now that is not understood, even though, you know, I'm thinking, how could you think any other way? But apparently it's true. So I say all of this because one of my friends in Phoenix, who I've been more friendly on social media than anything else, but I've met her professionally at a couple of different industry events back when I was working for the moving company in Arizona. And she made a comment and I said, you know, trust me, it's, you know, just read the post and, you know, we're cool. And she read it and goes, okay, great. Cause you know, I wouldn't want to, you know, miss out on seeing you on Facebook. Well, thank you very much. So Saturday morning, I'm pulling into the gym parking lot and she sends me a note and she says, you know, it was really great to, you know, connect with you. And I said, well, what are you doing? She says, well, I'm getting ready to go pick up my car at the Land Rover dealership or something like this. And I said, where is that? You know, don't you live in like East Mason? She goes, no, up in the North Valley. It turns out we were like 5 minutes away from each other. So on Saturday morning, thanks to social media and thanks to Facebook, we got to go spend 90 minutes chatting outside of a Panera Bread in Phoenix and just gabbing about life. So Mickey, I want to say thanks for taking time out of your Saturday. That was completely unexpected. Somebody that I did not expect to actually visit with face to face. And I'll tell you what, that was a great connection. So for everybody I got a chance to see this week, I want to say thanks for taking time out of your schedule to visit with me. For everybody I missed, sorry, but you know, we'll see you next year because I'm not coming back in the summertime when it's hot. Gail's coming on in just a second. Here's the rundown for what's happening the rest of this week so you can set your calendars and, you know, set your lives accordingly. By the way, if you follow the show right here on Blog Talk, there's a little button that says follow. You'll get an email or text update, your choice, and it will give you the correct link for today's show. So that way you can go and, you know, check in when you want. I get mine all the time. Tomorrow, best-selling author Caitlin Rother. She has got 9 books on the New York Times bestseller list, and I'm reading one of her books right now called Then No One Can Have Her. So we're going to find out about her challenges as a New York Times best-selling author. Interesting story. I've heard part of it at the SCWA event a few months back, and I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to visit with Caitlin tomorrow night. That's going to be actually an afternoon show starting at 3:30 in the afternoon. Wednesday, 90 minutes with Zoe Niklaus and Doug Johnston. There are tag team of psychics and astrologers. You know, Zoe's a psychic, Doug's the astrologer. And they'll be here for 90 minutes. And they kind of give you the twofer. So if you want to call in and ask a question about, you know, the new job or the love in your life or whatever it is, you can do that. And then Zoe will answer from her perspective as a psychic medium. And then Doug will answer as his perspective as an astrologer. And I think it's a kind of a fun 1-2 punch. On Thursdays, Rated LGBT Radio at an early showtime of 6:30 p.m., Rob Watson and I are going to be welcoming Jonathan Griffith. I don't know what we're going to talk to Jonathan about, but I scheduled him on March 9th, so he's going to be on. So he's probably an actor or an author or a singer or something like that. I should know this because I book all the guests, but Jonathan's going to be on. And then we're going to have like a little bit of an update from Terry Ray because his new play called Electricity is opening on the 22nd. On the Friday night dance party at an early start time of 1:30 p.m., musician Billy Grima is going to be on the show, and he's going to be talking about his brand new music. We're doing the show early because the young man has a gig. And I said, if you've got a paying gig, then we're doing the show early. So go make that money. So 1:30 is the showtime on Friday. That's hour number one. Hour number two of this Friday show is going to be DJ Grant Smith. He is the resident DJ at Rage in West Hollywood on Sunday afternoon, starting at 4:00. And Grant has graciously provided us an hour of his disco remixes. Then Saturday, we are going to be having Super Gay Radio at 8:00 in the morning. We're welcoming Miss Kasha Davis and Frank, who goes by the stage name of Miss Viola, for a RuPaul review. And that's a special 90-minute episode. Now, if I can time all of this perfectly, about 3 seconds after I finish the show, I'm going to be racing out to SCWA this Saturday morning, which I think starts at 10 o'clock, which is a perfect intro now, finally, for our dear friend, Miss Gail Carline. Gail, I miss you more than good luggage. How are you?
I am fine. How often do you lose your luggage?
Well, I will tell you, I much prefer hanging out with you than I do a bag of Louis Vuitton. So I think that says something about your worth in my life, which is exceptionally
I've been
high.
I seeing so, you. Yes. We see each other on Facebook, and that's about.
We see each other on Facebook.
One
of the things. Well, number one, you're always one of my favorite guests to have on the show. So number one, thanks for taking time out of your schedule. We're going to talk your books, everything tonight, but. Outside of that, you know, I was just talking about a couple of people who I connected with over on social media and actually got to spend time with really for the first time this weekend. And it's interesting the role that social media brings to people who use it for their careers. Now, it's fun if you want to be, putting your recipes up or staying in touch with your Aunt Mildred or whatever the case is. But for people like yourself who are, a business on top of having friends and family that you're connected with on social media, it takes on a different little bit of a light. And you're always posting content. So what's been your experience using Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or Pinterest or loud shouting?
I've learned really quickly and fortunately not through my own very own sad experience, but through watching others, that if you use social media to sell yourself, people, you become like a pariah. People turn away from you in droves. You just have to get on social media. It's a long-term process, and you get on and you make friends. And you're interested in their lives, and you share interesting things. And it's not, for me, being an author, it's not, every morning does not awaken to buy my book. It awakens to, this month is National Poetry Month, so I've been posting something about, some poem or, a link to a YouTube thing of, Walt Whitman reading something that he wrote or, it's being a part of a community and finding your tribe within this vast, internet community.
So you used a term tribe just a second ago, and I'm fascinated that I'm hearing more people use that term versus, my peeps or my buddies or my friends. Why is tribe a word that resonates with you?
Well, tribe is a word that resonates with me because, I have, let's face it, we have tiers of friendships, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there are people that I like a great deal, but I never see them. And so are they as close to me as the people that I see semi-regularly? No, but I still want to include them, and they're still still friendly with them, and they as like you were saying, they get me, like I get you and your sense of humor. And so I like that feeling that this tribe, we may not agree on all things, and we may not all be just, two peas in a pod, but we have a feeling of togetherness.
Do you find a lot of the crazy stuff that happens on social media, especially from people that you, I'm speaking for me, so I can't speak for you, but I'll see people that I really, really respect and admire. And then all of a sudden it's like they drank the wrong Kool-Aid for the day. And they've either gone off on a political rant or an anti-this or anti-that rant. And I sit here, Gail, and I go, okay, this is not what I expected from person XYZ. And
true. Yeah.
Does that ever shock you?
Sometimes it shocks me when I see an extended pattern. I know that, I may like this person. We may have a common sense of humor. We don't share political affiliations or religious affiliations or whatever it is. I just have to accept that a long time ago, I just accepted that that's their page. That's their wall. They can post whatever they want on it. I don't have to agree with it. And I don't have to, unless it's just heinous, I don't have to comment on what they put on. And it's, if it's a really bad rant, then I just think, well, you know, Uncle's been drinking a little early today, so.
So what, do you ever unfollow people?
I've only actually unfollowed people. There's a, he's a sweet guy, and I like him in small doses, but every post was something, you know, egregious. So, and it's not that I'm unfollowing him because I don't want to be his friend anymore. It's because, you know, if every post you're going to be is something that's going to be just wildly out there in the conspiracy theory of politics, then, you know, my blood pressure does a lot better if I'm not reading that from you all the time. But, you know, when I see you in the grocery store, I'm still going to say hi and we're going to talk. So,
right.
Yeah. And I did unfriend one person. And he was never inappropriate. He was my only friend in Ghana, of all places. And I friended him. But every time I got on, logged into Facebook, he wanted to PM me. He wanted to private message me. And it was always like, hi, what's the weather like in the United States? And, you know, we have corn here or something. You know, it was like an exchange of ideas, which is, yeah, it's fine, but I don't want that kind of messaging. And so finally I had to just unfriend him because I felt like I felt a little stalked. And it turns out that once the global warming impact happens and the polar the caps shift and all this, the only safe place to live will be Ghana. And now I'm screwed.
You've blown
it. I've unfriended my only friend in Ghana. So, yeah.
Well, maybe we can get like a GoFundMe or a Kickstarter campaign to, you know, get some friends in Ghana that will like us. Oh, my goodness. Well, I'll tell you, you know, I will tell you, I'm friends with a zillion people on social media. And there's none that I love reading your posts more than yours, Gail. Well, I'd say you have to be in like my top 10 club because I don't want to exclude, you know, like 9 other people that I adore as much as I adore you. But I'm singling you out tonight because you have some of the most clever, witty posts. And sometimes I don't know if it's, you know, it's intentional or if it's just pure Gail that you sit here and type some of these things and I read them and I literally am peeing my pants going, I can't believe she wrote this because it has just got me in stitches. But that I find that so familial. I find it very comforting. And here, you know, you are day in and day out doing this all of the time. So, you know, you have really, I say, kind of like your split personality here because you're a very successful murder mystery novelist. And then you also write these great humor-based books and blogs and articles all the time. And you have such a, you know, it's such a completely opposite end of each of the spectrum. And we've talked about this before, but where do you find the separation easier for you to say, okay, today I'm writing about hitting Perry over the head with a hammer. And then tomorrow we're going to write about, you know, something else.
Oh, it comes from the story you're telling, really. If I'm writing, when I'm writing fiction, it's different than when I'm writing, say my column, which is very, humor, Irma Bombeck kind of, slice of life humor. So when I'm writing that, I'm writing about my life and sometimes it's funny and sometimes it's not, but it's what I'm hoping to do is show through my life, connect with other people who've had the same experience, you know, try and talk about my life on kind of a global level that, you know, has your dryer ever caught fire? It's kind of fun.
It is.
Yeah, it is. But it just kind of, you know, the piece might be about the dryer catching fire, but it's really about what do people do in an emergency? Do you lose your head? Do you keep your wits about you? Do you figure out, you know, I figured out that, you know, I had my fire extinguisher in the wrong room because everybody says, you know, to keep it in the kitchen. because you'll have a kitchen fire. No, not really. Maybe you need one near the dryer, too, because lint. So anyway, so that's all about being global, and I like to make people laugh. When I'm into a story, the story may take a dark turn, and I just have to go with it. So, my writing, even in my mysteries, though, is my mysteries are, I mean, they're macabre sometimes. I mean, when you find a frozen hand in a freezer, that's kind of macabre. But but they're told in a lighthearted voice. So some people actually laugh.
And I think that's one of the things that I appreciate about your writing style, though, is that you you bring the listeners, you bring your readers in easily with the characters who are very lovable and approachable, and even in these horrible situations that they're in, you know, just maybe it's a look that they give or something that they say or just how you phrase a particular paragraph or scene. People are really kind of taken aback, and you do giggle a little bit along the way. And I think that that is disarming for a murder mystery. You're not expecting to also have kind of a good time.
Well, as long as it all turns out well in the end, and I'm kind of a big believer. It's why I don't write horror, because horror doesn't end well. And I kind of like to have a happy ending.
Yeah. So. Well, and you do that so well. So you told me before the show tonight that you've got a workshop or a class that you're going to be teaching coming up pretty soon. Can you tell us about that and how people can get involved?
Yes, I am super excited about this. So I am the current president of the Orange County chapter of Sisters in Crime. And that's it's an international organization committed to the support of and promotion of women mystery and thriller authors, sisters in crime. We do have misters in our organization, though, so we do have the men folk as well. Our chapter of Sisters in Crime is pairing with the Placentia Library, and we're going to be giving a workshop on just the basics of how to write a novel. And I'm really excited about this. We're going to have a number of our own chapters authors there, and they're going to talk, because there's no right way to write a novel. There's a bunch of different ways, and at times when you're writing, they will all feel like the wrong way, but everybody's going to share their experience of how they developed their ideas, whether they outlined or whether they just wrote, what were some of the pitfalls, some of the hardships, some of the lumps and bumps in the road. And then, this is the exciting part for me, I want people to attend the workshop with either an idea they have for a novel, but they don't know how to get started, or they've started a book, they don't know how to keep it going, they've reached that horrible, muddlesome middle that they don't know, you know, they're suffering from writer's block, and they need to move forward, and they don't know how. We're going to sit with those people one-on-one, and we're going to talk and try and give them ideas for leaping ahead and finishing what they started. And it's exciting to me because before I wrote my first book,
Gail, my direct connect, I hate to tell you this, it just kind of like died on me, so I had to dial in on the phone.
I'm here.
So there we go.
I'm here. Oh, my gosh.
Like, fantastic story, and I'm like, my line died.
It was mine. I kept hearing this little kind of beepy thing. Now, I looked at my phone before we started, and it said it had plenty of battery, so I'm not sure what happened, but I'm back. I'm here. So anyway, so we're having this workshop. I really want people to bring in their – where did I stop? Where did I die?
Let's start – people coming into the workshop, and you're going to sit down one-on-one with them.
Yeah, so we want to sit down one-on-one. We want to help them with their problem children, you know, with their manuscripts that aren't going anywhere, and they need to somehow punch through that problem and move forward. Or maybe they've got an idea for a story, and they just sit and look at that blank piece of paper, and they don't know what to do with it. So we're going to give them some ideas, some suggestions, some advice, and try and get them going. And the reason I'm so excited about this is that, you know, before I wrote my first book, I probably got 10 unfinished books laying around somewhere.
Can we talk about unfinished books in a moment?
Hmm?
Can we talk about unfinished books in just a moment?
Yeah, because, you know, I just, you know, I'd start them, I'd get, like, the first chapter, and then I couldn't figure out where to go with it. Or I would get one book I got, like, probably a good third to halfway through, and I just couldn't figure out where it was going. And so, you know, they just languished there. I had this great idea for a gay vampire and wrote, like, a killer first chapter, and then went, okay, and done, I guess. I don't know. So I understand that feeling of I have this in me, I have it to say, I can't say it. And then I have the experience of knowing that, yes, I can finish it. And sometimes it's hard work, you know. Writing an entire book is hard work. So, yeah. So anyway, this workshop, before I forget, it's Saturday, April 30th, and it's at the Placentia Library in Placentia. That's North Orange County, and it will be at 10 in the morning till 12:30 in the afternoon, and the address of the library is 411 East Chapman, so very easy to remember.
Do they get any snacks or anything like that?
Yes, snacks will be provided.
Cool.
And some drinks, at least waters. I don't know what else they'll scare up, but our library tries to take good care of us.
So for everybody who's listening, the event, again, is going to be posted on the Sisters in Crime Orange County Facebook page. I've actually put a link to that on my thing with Gail tonight on my wall. So if you go and like their page, you'll also see the information about that event as well. And I think that would be totally fun. I've been to one of the Sister in Crime meetings before. I think it was in Irvine. And, mm-hmm. You know, of course, I'm a big fan of whenever Gail says, can you come to something? And then my next door neighbors, Jeff and Jill, they always say, well, we're going to go see Gail. I'm like, how can I not go see Gail? You're going to go see Gail. I've got to go see you and see Gail. You know, so it's, kind of, it's this great community of people. And I'm so, I don't say in love with, because that sounds a little weird, but I'm in love with these people that I've met through Jeff and Jill and SCWA, and now I know you. And there are just so many creative, vibrant writers out there in our local community that anytime that you are leading something, Gail, I want to be part of it or know about it, because you have the right type of people there to help people who want to be writers. And I think that's important for people to know that they do have resources out there like you who are, you know, providing a valuable service.
Well, you know, in writing, it's not a zero sum game, you know, so if you buy my books, you won't like not buy other people's books.
Right.
As a matter of fact, if you buy my books, you'll probably go out and buy more people's books because you're a reader. So I found everybody in the writing community that I've come across are tremendously helpful. They're not trying to guard their territory at all. So, and I should mention that this workshop is completely free. So
free,
you just show up there.
Yeah.
Free is a good price. It's a very good price. I really would like to get a lot of attendees and to help a lot of people, as many people as we can in 2.5 hours. So.
And so now I'm just going to publicly ask you. So if you, when you post that and I see that, I will reshare that to everybody just so I'm accountable to you. So everybody's hearing me be accountable to Gail, but I would love to help promote that. So anytime you post that up between now and the time the workshop is at, I'll make sure to blog that out as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Yay. Can I ask a question that has not, this is a selfish question because I'm asking for me, but you know,
okay.
I, You can say, no, I don't want to answer that. And I'm really okay with that too. So at the beginning of the year, and it was actually New Year's Eve, I read a book that Jeff, our friend, our friend Jeff Michaels wrote about death and dying. And what it did was it inspired me to really kind of break through creatively what I had wanted to do for a book for a long time. Cause I've been writing and writing and writing, and I have volumes of notebooks that I sit down and I write by pen and paper. And I kept writing all of these, you know, miraculous, you know, stories that weren't really going anyplace. And, you know, it's more like a diary type of a writing. And I've read books from people before who, you know, write these little diary type of anecdotes, and they're quite interesting, but I was not really inspired by anything that I had written to come to an end, or I was really looking for an end of the book. Well, reading Jeff's book, I went, oh, this is what I need to do. So I said, you know, by the end of January, now we're, you know, towards the end of April, I'm going to have my first book. I'm going to write 3 books this year, and I'm just going to get these things done. And I sat down the first like week, and I wrote pretty much every night, a couple of hours a night, and really loved what I did. And then I hit this creative dry spell, and because I'd outlined everything that I was going to do, I knew it was just going to be basically a fill in the blank. So here we are 4 months later, 3.5 months later into the new year, and I've legitimately got about 3 minor stories that I have left to tell in this book, and I just can't. I after the end of the show, when I'm usually my most creative, I'm finding excuses to do just about everything except sit down and finish these last 3 little stories to be done with this book, which I love, because I'll go back and reread it and go like, that's the story I wanted to tell. That's the story I wanted to tell. Ooh, that was funny. Okay, good. And so here I am, Gail, with a tiny little bit left. What would you tell an aspiring author to help either motivate or guide or kick me in the pants to find the oomph to make this happen?
Okay, well, first I have to ask you, you're talking about having 3 stories left to tell. You know what those 3 stories are?
Right. So I already know the stories.
Okay.
It's just,
so you already
know
the stories.
Yeah.
I would probably tell you that at this point, it's just a matter of a death march. You've got 3 stories left to tell. You find your writing space that has the absolute least distractions. You put on whatever background noise you need to put on. You put the puppies in another room so they're not tempting you. And you slog through it. And even if as you're typing it in your head, you're going, oh, my God, this is the worst thing I've ever written. Type it, or write it, handwrite it, whatever. Write it, even if you think it's just dreck. Just write it. You've got 3 stories left to tell. And possibly by the time you finish the first page of the first story, that those juices will be going again. But sometimes you just have to sit down and say, this may be dreck, but I can't edit a blank page. I have to have something on there I can edit. So just write, even if you have to go back and you end up like, even if you go back and you end up stripping out, you know, an entire story and rewriting it from scratch, at least you know what's wrong and you can fix it, okay? Because writing is about rewriting.
Yeah.
And there are times where you can use little, like if you were telling a story from start to finish, if it was a common theme and a common arc, we might talk about visualizing, because 3 stories is almost the end, so visualizing the end of the book and what are the last scenes you see and, you know, finding a way to get there. Or, you know, one of my other fond things to do is if I'm kind of stuck in the middle of a scene, I will read through at least the last chapter, read it like a reader, not a writer, and somehow it picks up from there. If I'm in the middle of the book, of course, I just hit somebody in the head with something, and that seems to pick everything up. So
I love when you say that. You know, the thing is, I totally believe you when you say, well, okay, let's see, I can't figure out what to do. Oh, let's hit them in the head with a hammer. That always works. I get such a kick when you say that.
Well, when you're writing, you know, a mystery or a suspense or thriller, one of those sorts of things, you don't want the clues and the investigative work to go on for so long that people's eyes glaze over. So you've got to have some action, you know, in the middle of finding a clue, you've got to have somebody in danger or something like that. So, and it's the trick is to not make it artificial.
So let me ask you about that.
Organically.
Because, you know, that's a great point because, you know, I've read books by really well-known authors and you start reading things and I'm going to pick on, I won't mention the author's name, but the author likes to write these great books, but then he throws in all of this stuff about the fact that the main character in this particular series can fly an airplane. So then he writes about this particular airplane and, you know, the thing, the gauges and all of this other stuff. And I have to think there's, and I like to read, but as soon as I get to those portions of those books, I just, my eyes totally glaze over and I'm like, Gail, doesn't he realize that nobody that he's writing for ever is going to care about this instrument panel on this particular plane ever? And it has nothing to do with anything. Yet we've got 8 pages of it.
Yeah.
And I'm,
my opinion is that the larger the author gets in terms of building readership and building fame, the less editing their works receive because now they're a big name author and, you know, they don't want all this stuff cut out. And another thing is, you know, if they think they're writing for a particular audience and it's possibly, you know, like the geek community, I know Tom Clancy writes a lot of detail into his, you know, his military stuff, and all the military guys just dig it. They eat it up. Where I would, you know, I'm more of the person like Elmore Leonard's famous advice is to leave out the parts most people skip. So I'd rather do that.
How did you get to the point though, where you, as an author, because you do it well. You should teach classes on this to these bigger authors, but you do it well. So you do have enough of everything mixed in. You have a great mix. When did you get to the point in your writing where you said, okay, I've found my niche, I found my rhythm in making this interesting and it's not boring anybody to tears like those other books that we just talked about?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that you ever get to that point because once I get finished with the book and get finished with my editing process and I hand it off to my beta readers and my editor, they do come back with, this is boring, you know, take this out or put it somewhere else or something like that. So I do mess that part up from time to time. But mostly it comes from my editing process. One of the things I do when I edit a book is I have a little cheapo digital voice recorder, and I will sit and read the entire book chapter by chapter into that digital voice recorder. Then I just sit with a pad of paper, turn the recorder on, and listen. And I can hear, you know, I can feel my own eyes glazing over. That's how I do that.
Okay, so you said you had some beta readers and an editor. How, at this stage of the game, now that you're, you know, deep into your book series and everything that you do as a writer, how much real editing really does happen for Gail Carling?
Lots.
Really?
I will say my editor will back me up on this. I write cleanly, so there are very few typos, very few grammar problems. But a lot of it will be content, and I am just a fool for commas. I love them. My editor finally broke me of the semicolon, so I no longer use those. I grieve over them, but I no longer use them. But I have a tendency when I'm writing that if I would take a breath right here at this word, I'll put a comma there. And
well,
that's
of course.
Really not. Well, yeah, but that's not the rules. Rules aren't like that. So, yeah. I still do quite a bit of editing. I mean, editing the current book that's going to be out in June. So, yeah.
So can you
just
tell
like
us
that.
About
and
the new
I'm,
book?
And I'm kind of.
Go ahead.
I still, you know, when I do the final edits, I'll order a copy of the book in paperback, and then I also do the book in Kindle, and I'll download it to my Kindle, and I reread the books in both formats, and I will still find things that I need. You know, I'm kind of anal.
How smart is that? Do you think a lot of people do what you do, or are you unique in that process, Gail?
I might be unique in that process. I'm sure most people look at me and just roll their eyes, but I just have to do it.
But I love the fact that you order a book, because even today I'll read books for guests that are on the show, and because I really do read the books when the guests come on, and I don't know how it works for other shows, but I just kind of want to get a feel for, you know, how they write, what their, you know, what their style is like. And I am shocked when I'll have authors of, you know, fairly big name books, and I'll be reading this, and we have words that are misspelled, or we have the bad punctuation, or things are capitalized where they shouldn't be. And I am hardly the grammar police ever, but it shocks me that, you know, my eyes are how many eyes down the road, and this was never caught and never updated or corrected before it went into a legitimate print. And that to me is just shocking, because that's unforgivable. I mean, I suppose there are worse things in life, but as a writer or as an editor, you should be whipped if you're letting work like that get published.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it mortifies me to find after it's been published, to find a typo. Oh my gosh. Just kill me now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, so can we talk about some of the things that you're doing to support your writing nowadays? I want to ask you about your son and all the stuff that he's doing too, so I don't want to forget about that. But you've been going to, if I call it a book fair, does that sound right? But you've been going to like book events and taking gift baskets?
Yeah, I've been doing, well, I mean, I'm always doing any, you know, if there's an author festival or a book festival. I unfortunately was not able to do the LA Times Festival of Books this year. Normally I share a table with a bunch of friends, and we're just a kind of a ragtag group of friends who all write mysteries, and we get a booth at the Festival of Books called Murder We Wrote, and it's a lot of fun, and we spend 2 days just being crazy fun with each other. But I did a book fair at the Lab Ante Mall in Costa Mesa, which I'd never been to. It's a very millennial style, very hip place to be. But I did okay, you know, selling books. And lately I've just started taking, you know, like I decided to have fun with it. I put together a gift basket. It's got some of my books. It's got a little bit of swag, and maybe a gift card to a local restaurant. And I just take it, and I'll announce on social media, you know, if you come up to me and say the secret phrase, I'll give you the basket. And it worked out really well at the festival in October. In the one at the author fest at the lab, nobody came up, so I took the gift basket home. So, oh well, it's waiting for the next festival.
Well, the nice thing is it is waiting for the next festival. You do such a cool job, though. Cause I like that you actually – it's not like you make people work hard for it, but you make people work for it. It's like, you know, you have to say the phrase that pays in order to get the book or the gift basket. That's cool. So
it's also kind of a – I mean, a lot of publicity and marketing for books, it's kind of like throw it all out there and see what works. So, you know, it is a little bit of, well, is the mic tapping the microphone, is this thing on? Are people paying attention or not?
Mm-hmm.
So,
So do you have certain things that you've figured out on social media that work really well for you and your readers and how they like to engage with you? And what would be something that maybe that you've done that you go like, oh, we're never doing that again?
I think I did pay for a Facebook ad click through, and it just didn't get me much of anything. What worked the last time super well was I managed to get a book featured on, there are sites that if you do some giveaways, there are sites that will feature that you're giving the book away. And a lot of people go, no, not don't give it away. But when you've got multiple books out, if you give one away and lower the price of the next one to 99 cents, you'll find people will take the free one, download the free one, buy the next one for $2.99, and pretty soon they'll just and you know they'll buy the rest of them. So
yeah.
You know, it's kind of like giving them a little sample to try before they buy. So there's a website called BookBub. Book B-U-B, BookBub, and it does cost money, but I made probably four times the initial investment, so that worked really well.
Nice.
So I will try and do that again.
So I'm always curious because, you know, we only really hear about like Amazon. It's like, you know, the big name that's out there. And even Amazon, I think you posted about this a couple of months ago. Amazon is breaking into the brick and mortar business because they can and they have, you know, the resources to do that. And turning, you know, these tiny little places into what used to be mom and pop stores into Amazon stores, which I kind of think is really kind of cool. But you know, outside of that, you know, how do people outside of Amazon, how would anybody ever know that there's a BookBub as a resource or any of these other unique little niche places to go find books or authors? Is there like a depository of, you know, Google types of places for people to go and search for these types of opportunities to find authors like you?
I'm trying to think of how I even found out about BookBub. I think I found it. Most of these things are very word of mouth. And BookBub, and I started off with, there was a site that promoted the free Kindle books, and they had a mailing list. And then their popularity kind of died out, but then BookBub took over. So a lot of these places have mailing lists, and you'll get, you know, an email once a day from them that here's our, and you'll select, you know, this is the category I want to look through, and they'll send you, it's like, here's what's free today in mysteries, things like that. But you find it a lot just through the community of whatever e-reader that you have. And, of course, Kindle is the most popular. So, you know, the links out there are all over the place.
You know, and I'm a little slow sometimes, Gail, so this didn't even like hit me because we're also focused about, you know, okay, go to Amazon and buy Gail's books, which you should do. And if you go to the show page tonight, just as a little mini commercial, there's a link that says buy Gail's books on Amazon here. And if you go there, you're going to go to all of Gail's books. And secondary to that, but super secondary, I've got a link on the Rated G Radio Superstar Swag page on Amazon. And if you click there and you go to the book section, Gail's book, Murder on the Hoof, is the first book in there. So she's our featured artist of the day. So go check that out.
Okay.
But buy Gail's books on Amazon. Go and do that. Okay. But my question is, I know, you know, there are the places that we used to go when we were kids and we got to go get books for free. And it was really kind of cool, but not a lot of people talk about doing this anymore, and they're called libraries.
Love my library.
Yeah, and you're very involved in the Placentia Library. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing to help the community there?
Well, I started with the Placentia Library when my son graduated from high school, and I complained in one of my newspaper columns that now I didn't have anything to do with my free time. And so they sent me an email saying, you know, we've been waiting for you. So I started the library has, most libraries do have a fundraising arm, and they're usually called the Friends of the Library.
Okay.
So we have a Friends of the Library group, the Placentia Library Friends Foundation. And I actually started out on the board there and worked fundraisers for them for a little bit. And then I was approached by one of the Board of Trustees. And they said, I'm going to not run again, you know, and I think you would be a good candidate. And so I interviewed and applied, and I was appointed an interim trustee, and then I ran for office and was elected. And I'll be running again this year. So it's the least political position you can run for, apart from maybe dog catcher. But what we do, there's a board of five of us, and the library is a special district. Our library is. We get our funding from our city's taxes, and we control our own funding. So what we do is, as trustees, is we oversee the funding, we oversee the oversee the policies and procedures. You know, we make or back decisions that we hire in the library director, and we either make decisions or back the decisions that she's made, and we keep the wheels turning in the library.
So what is it like for an independent author like yourself? And I say independent authors because that's really, you know, the state of, you know, the writing industry, and except, you know, for the few major big publishers that are out there. How would an independent author like you get your books into a public library like the Placentia Library?
By approaching the library director and talking to them. My books are in the local library because I was involved with the library. And so it does help if you can be involved in your local library. But you do have to kind of make the connection, the personal connection with any library that you want to be a part of. Now, one of the things, and I don't have the specifics on this, but libraries are now allowing you to check out for free e-books. And they have a couple of resources. One is called Overdrive, and I can't remember the other one, but if you can get into that catalog, your books will be available to the libraries for checkout for e-books. And I'm not sure I'm not sure how the pay goes for that.
That's interesting. So for every library across the country, is there like some master library email list or resource list that people can go either buy or get someplace from, you know, the library of the libraries where they can get every, you know, contact name or number to call and say, hey, I've got this new book, Murder on the Hoof, part due. And, you know, can I get it into your, you know, stacks?
There is. And I know it's online. I know you can. And actually, I would probably just look up under ALA, American Library Association, and they have lists.
I love that. That is cool to know. Out of all the people that I've ever talked to, I've never thought about that until you came on and you know, stirred my interest here, Gail. I'm telling you, I learn something new every time we visit. Oh goodness! So we've got
but
about
it,
7 minutes.
It does, I have to say, it works best when you have a personal interaction with the library and don't just send them, you know, here I've got this book. You know, they have a limited budget. Everybody has a limited budget for the amount of materials they buy, and so you want to give them a good reason to buy yours. So what's a good reason? Well, you're a local author. Maybe you can offer free workshops that you know. You want to approach everything, especially as an independent author. Everything has to be, I know this sounds stupid, cliched, win-win. You have to, if you're going to get something from them, you have to give something to them. So you have to always be thinking in those terms.
That's a great value add. You know, again, you got to figure out where you're going to provide value back to the community for them to get your book. Okay, so. And if I'm asking the wrong question, I apologize in advance. But, you know, when you get your book to a library, are they giving you, you know, like your list price of $19.95? Is that what you get? Or are they paying you $5 trillion for having your book there forever? How does that work?
No, they just buy it once. They might buy a couple of copies.
Okay.
You know, just because copies tend to wear out. But yeah, they just pay the I guess just the list price.
So if you do workshops for your local library, or and you know you go there and you know really well, are you there also selling books, or are you just there to hey go check out the three copies that they bought?
It all depends on the library and the agreement you reach with them. So
okay.
I'm usually allowed to sell my books when I do a workshop at our library. Oftentimes I will sell the books and then donate the profits to the library. Just again, win-win.
Goodwill.
Now I've got my books in people's hands, and you know the library made a little money. So
there, I love that. We've got 4 minutes left, Gail. I can't believe the hour's over, and
I know, somebody I could talk to
forever and ever. What would be like one last little sage words of wisdom for a budding author that might be listening tonight?
Sage words. Don't be afraid to write badly. Just like the best words I was ever told was that you're probably going to write some real dreck and just own it, because you can always go back and edit it. So
write dreck.
You know, keep writing, even if it's not shiny and stellar. Just keep writing. It'll turn in. It's like clay. It's like you're molding Play-Doh. Okay, you can't mold the Play-Doh till you have it in your hands. So just keep working
that Play-Doh.
Working those words. Yeah.
Okay, I said that was one question. Now I've got a second one. Okay, so when you write. Well, I have like a list of questions here for you. So, you know, I got through about like 1% of them. So as a writer, and you get done writing, how open to the editing process are you as a writer? Do you ever, you know, write something and say, okay, now I've clearly written the best thing that's ever been written. So when I give this to my beta readers, my editors, they are going to so love this. Are you open to getting them, you know, to come back and say, Gail, were you high?
I have to be open. You have to open that up. You've just got to have thick skin and open up the possibility that you're deluded. And quite frankly, when I write that sentence that I just think is like a gift from God, I know as I'm writing it, as I'm looking at it, that this is probably the sentence that's going to end on the cutting room floor. I have to be prepared for it, you know. If you can't stand it, you can always take out those things and put them in a file called, you know, my babies, because you have to be willing to kill your babies. So you just keep them in your little file called these are my babies, and you know, and you can take them out and look at them from time to time, but maybe you can use them again some other way. But yeah, you just have to be willing to. You know, your beta readers, you've hopefully chosen because they're going to make your work stronger. Your editor, you have chosen because they want to make the book the best that it can be. So if you are not listening to them, you're, well, stupid. Sorry.
Yeah, why are
you
having
if you're
going to
pay an editor, you know, $1,200 to edit your work, then take their advice. Take their notes.
Right. Well, Gail, I'm telling you, I love our time together, and it's not humanly possible that an hour has passed, but it certainly has.
I know.
So
oh my
when
gosh.
The new book finally is, you know, closer to being out, we need to schedule this now, as you already know. Just, you know, let's get you back on, and we'll move some units and talk about your book and all the cool stuff. That's
okay.
That would be cool. And so for everybody else, please go buy some of Gail's books. You can buy all of them tonight. And like I always say, you buy 10 copies of each. You keep one for yourself, and you have your, you know, gift pack of books of Gail's that you're going to give out throughout the course of the year for birthdays and anniversaries and parties and housewarmings and things like that. It will keep Gail writing great material for you, and you will be entertained. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. Glad to be back, and I don't think I'm getting a break now until Christmas. So, we'll take a break when I'm filming my movie this July, but no breaks until then. So for everybody listening tonight, thank you for being here. Follow the show, go buy Gail's books, and we will see you live tomorrow at 3:30 in the afternoon with author Caitlin Rother. And that will be a fun show as well. Tell your friends and family to tune in, and don't drive distracted. You've been listening to
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.
See, it already tells you. Have a great night, everybody.